from PRX.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and friends beyond the binary, it's time for the podcaster that really, I don't know my pink noise from my white noise from my brown noise, and I also say, where the heck's the orange noise? But this is a different kind of noise. Noise that hopefully gives you a taste of joys with a Z, because it's sleepy. It's time for Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. All right, but this is Scoots here. This is where ask you to, hey, if you think about signing up for Sleep With Me Plus at sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus, with just a few questions. If you're new to the show, just ignore this message. Or if you only listen to Sleep With Me occasionally, or it could be easily replaced by another show, not important. Do you listen to Sleep With Me regularly? Yes. But yeah, does it improve your life in any way at all? And would you miss Sleep With Me if we stopped making it? Like, how much would you be willing to give on an annual basis or a monthly basis to say, hey, go ahead and start that podcast back up? So this is a way of not doing that. I'm asking if the answer to those questions are yes. Yeah, you're a regular listener. Yes, Sleep With Me improves your life. Yes, I could and would pay for the show. If it was missing from my life, I'd pay to get it back. Or if you lost it, like you'd say, oh, where has my Sleep With Me podcast gone? Could you help me find it? And this is a reward, whatever, $120. I need my year of Sleep With Me back. Or you would find a way to support the show if you said, well, now I got to put up a poster. If the answers are yes, like I do need, like we're kind of in that place right now, and the whole podcasting industry is in that place more or less, where it's like, hey, I really need you to think about supporting the show right now. If the answer is yes to those questions, so we don't have to go through, oh, where has my Sleep With Me podcast gone? Because I don't want that. I love making the show. It does take a team of people to make the show. So think about it. Sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. If you get a lot out of the show and you'd miss it and you'd say, oh, where has my Sleep With Me podcast gone? Sign up for sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. And I'll thank you. Believe me, I'll send you a video and say thanks. Thanks so much. Support for Sleep With Me comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting your time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/withme. That's odoo.com/withme. Odoo, modern management made simple. All right, everybody, it's time to talk about tonight's sponsor, Helix Sleep. Do yourself a favor, go to helixsleep.com/sleep and take that Helix quiz. That was about 4 years ago that I took the Helix quiz, got matched with the Helix Dusk Lux, which is a perfect mattress for me and the way I sleep. Because the thing is, the Helix lineup offers 20 unique mattresses, including the award-winning Lux collection, the newly released Helix Elite collection. They have a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, even a mattress made just for kids. And how would you know which one is going to fit you and your body? You just take that Helix sleep quiz. You find the perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. That personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new mattress. And here's the thing. Everybody's unique. Everybody sleeps differently. And that is why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from. Each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. You know, if you're like me, I sleep on my stomach and my side. I sleep a hot, so I want to stay cool. And that's what happened. I took the quiz. I got matched with the Helix Dusk Lux. I love my Helix Dusk Lux. And the way I know is every time I leave town, I cannot wait to get back. That first night back in my Helix Dusk Lux, it's like I'm in a state of sleep bliss. Not only is it the best mattress I've slept on, but setup is fast and easy. Helix mattresses are delivered in a box straight to your door for free. And Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/sleep and use the code HELIXPARTNER20. This is their best offer yet. It won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now. You know, patrons enable us to pay people like Chris Posty Posterson from Sounds Like an Earful Studios, who edited the show and did the theme music. Also want to thank Scotty and Jennifer on our artwork, Jonathan Mann on the lullabies. I'm at Dear Scooter on Twitter. Thanks, everybody, that I don't get to thank in person or directly. Thank you. And I also want to personally thank the moderators who moderate the listener Facebook group. You can connect there at sleepwithmepodcast.com/nods. Julian, Jennifer, Stacy, Lauren, Keith, and Summer, and Sarah. And that's it. Let's get on with the show. Hey, up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble staying asleep. Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. We do it with a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. I'm going to do the rest. What I'm going to attempt to do is create a safe place where you can set aside whatever's keeping you awake. Whether it's thoughts, feelings, physical sensations, what else, like travel, whatever's keeping you awake. Could be anything. Could be something I've never listed before, something I haven't experienced, but I can relate to because I've had trouble sleeping, and that's why I create this safe place. I smooth it, I pat it, I rub it down. I work very hard, and I'm here with open arms because I'm glad you're here. And the way I do it is I send my voice across the deep, dark night. I use these lulling, soothing, creaky, dulcet tones, pointless meanders, tangents, mugs of tangents. I got tangents, I have a few. I can't even get out of this tangent-related tangent. Tangerine tangents. If they had a flavor, one of them would be tangerine. I think tangerine, when it's a flavoring, is usually mixed with something else. But whatever, I'm glad you're here. And I'm here to help you fall asleep. If you're new, here's the structure of the show. Normally, the first 6 minutes of the show up front are business, because it's a sleep podcast, and that's how we keep the show going. And if you're new, not that important. If you're a regular listener, remember, when your hand hits the fridge tomorrow, think about, sleep with me. Am I a patron? Am I supporting the sponsors? Whatever it is. So it's the first 6 minutes. Then we're in an intro. I'm thinking I'm going to experiment tonight and try to make a short intro. A smorgasbord. I just almost said smorgasbord instead of short. And usually, actually, that was an inadvertent metaphor. Usually these intros are about 12 minutes long. And their attempt at a metaphor about the podcast, which kind of smorgasbord may be correct. What a wonderful word, smorgasbord. Almost wants to say smorgasbord. Borg. Like, you don't have to worry. Like, smorgasbord is very, especially borg, like, it's the kind of thing you could mutter. And doesn't take a lot of effort. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. So the intro is like 12 minutes of me metaphorically trying to describe what the podcast is. After 600-something episodes, I'm totally not clear on, I'm still not clear on exactly how it works. I know why it's here. It's to help you fall asleep, to get a good night's rest, because I feel like you deserve it. And I'm familiar with it. I'm familiar with the smorgasbord of thoughts I have at bedtime. They just keep coming, and they want to talk to me. They want me to do stuff. They want my attention. Sometimes I can't even rein them in. And I'm also a smorgasbord of other reasons. I can't sometimes, lately for me, I think I've talked about it. It's like I could keep waking up. I don't even got to pee. I just wake up. I say, what the heck? I want to go back to sleep now. Or not being able to, whatever it is, that's why I make the show. I've been there. And I said, you know what I would like is someone to sit near my bed to keep me company, to be there for me, especially when I couldn't sleep as a kid. That's what I really wanted to just say. Hey, I don't even know if I can help you fall asleep, but I'll be here to keep you company because I know how much it sucks. That's really that's the nature, the purpose, and the essence of this podcast. Is I want to be here for you because I know it sucks and I think you deserve a good night's sleep. And I'd like to, the weird thing is, I guess after this, I try to take your mind off of it. When I was a kid, I listened to Dr. Demento, this comedy radio show. And now as an adult, I try different stuff. None of it works. I've tried a lot of stuff for me. It works for some people. And so I said, well, geez, maybe I could tell some goofy stories. I have a smorgasbord of pointless stories in my brain. And that's what I try to do is three times a week I'm here and talk about three different things. Tonight, it'll be our ongoing episodic series, After the Glass Slipper. You know, Sunday nights are TV show recaps, and Tuesday nights are just one-off stories. So there's a variety of things to choose from that should distract you. So they say, well, just thinking about a smorgasbord, that's kind of a timeless, I guess it isn't timeless, because you can't really, I think you could, maybe in the 70s there were still smorgasbords. Doesn't really, I think when the invention of signs came out, they said, well, we can't fit smorgasbord on a sign. I think in the U.S. it could be traced back to the interstate system. And I think that was Eisenhower, maybe. And they said, well, that was the end of the smorgasbord. I don't know. I don't think Helen listens to the show often, but Helen Z, if you're listening, how about smorgasbord? That's a nice word. I might have to email. And by the way, check out the Illusionist podcast. Smorgasbord. It's a word that feels good in your head. Like it does. Like, I don't know if you can go ahead and say it with me. You can mumble it. Smorgasbord. It's got a good upper palate vibration for me. And it's kind of comforting. I think it's a comforting word about comfort food. Smorgasbord. I could say it all day. But I did promise I'd try to make a short intro. Usually these intros are 12 minutes. And I said, well, let's see if we make a short intro, what happens. It kind of like testing out thoughts. But I say, well, what if I listen to a strange podcast where this man meanders and chatters and doesn't go? And will that help me fall asleep? I don't know. That's what I'm here for, though. Oh, also, if you're new, this podcast, you don't really need to listen to it too closely. The stories will kind of make sense, and they'll have a middle, beginning, and end. Middle, I don't know what a minnow is, but I don't know, there won't be, I haven't had any minnow stories with minnows, but so it's a podcast you can kind of listen to, but you don't need to listen to it. But also, you're under no pressure to fall asleep. I'll be here for about an hour. I'll be here all the way to the end. In case you can't fall asleep, or so you have plenty of time to just drift off, to relax. I put a lot of work into it to keep you company. So if it takes you 40 minutes to drift off, I'll be here. I'll be here talking. I'll be here using my creaky dulcet tones. I'll be here in the deep, dark night for you. And I say this every intro because I mean it. I'm glad you're here. And I really hope and I really yearn to help you fall asleep. Or walk you or escort you across the threshold from wake to sleep. So thanks so much for stopping by, and let's get on with the show. Before we get to the story. All right, everybody, it is time to talk about tonight's sponsor, ZocDoc. And I think all of us have that family member that you tend to change the subject or kind of bend the truth around when they start asking, you know, for life updates. Oh, why are you still living at home? Oh, when are you doing this? Oh, what's your job again? And while grinning and bearing it with relatives like that is considered polite, there's no way you should be doing that with your doctor. You know, when you have questions or your doctor's asking you questions about your life, you want to have someone you feel comfortable enough to be honest with. And that's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc is a place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable and actually listen to you. And we're not just talking about a few. We're talking about tens of thousands of doctors, all with verified patient reviews. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. No more waiting awkwardly on hold with the receptionist. And just like I said, we're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. And you can filter for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're looking for. And the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 to 72 hours. That's it. You can even score same-day appointments. And I love hearing from listeners who have tested out ZocDoc, whether they've gotten new insurance, they've moved to a new area, because they found out the same thing I have, how easy it is to use and how great it is to see all of your options. So we've tested it out. You should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/sleep and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/sleep. 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 Thanks, everybody. Sleep With Me is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Okay, hey, this is another episode of our procedural. Oh, no, this isn't procedural. It's not programmatic. It's episodic, and again, this is just how my brain functions. This is why I can do a sleep podcast. My brain is organizes, and it's itself. When it comes to my brain structure, it's constantly restructuring and randomizing. Oh, I just had it, and then I forgot. Like, I almost had the word. As they said, I always picture a classroom. And the things on the top of the shelf, it'll come to me modular. So this is our episodic modular series, meaning you can listen to it any order after The Glass Slipper. And it's the tale of kind of what happened after Cinderella became, after The Glass Slipper. She became princess, she became queen. But our story follows her stepmother, Agatha. We're in our third season. Only thing you need to know about season one and season two, well, I mean, Cinderella's a great queen, but of course, you know, no world is perfect. So she dealt with her own ups and downs. Agatha became, started to get along. She became a trusted advisor, almost like the hand of the queen. And, so she's nothing like Circe, Cinderella. I mean, Agatha has a touch of Circe, but, at some point in season two, she became a pit, P-I-T of lentils, L-E-N-T-I-L-S, I believe. Now, don't overthink this one. She's a human. She has a human consciousness, but she exists as a, but that's just a fact. You could picture her as just a regular teacher. She's a teacher this season. But I just want you to know all the facts. She is a pit of lentils, but that's not really that important to the story. So I don't know why I mention it at every opening. Because it's super confusing, and then I feel need to. She's like a swimming pool full of lentils, but much like if the lentils were also nanobots, she has the ability to kind of move on her own, using kind of momentum, gravity. Probably, I think she said they have pumps and stuff there. She can form into a humanoid form and probably express herself. So to me, I mean, when I'm telling the story, it's seamless. I know her as Pit of Lentils, but I also know the deeper soul within her, Agatha, stepmother to Cinderella. I've seen her change over years, and some things stay the same, you know what I'm saying? But she's a Pit of Lentils, not a bit like, oh, but also she's a teacher, co-teacher with a teacher named Shelley. They're teaching the fairy godchildren of the fairy godparents, and the descendants, because they've kind of, the two cultures, the fairy culture and the human culture of this, wherever it is, they've merged due to a loss of the fairy kingdom for the most part. And so this is kind of about the foundational myths of, you know, heroes and stuff of the fairy culture. So that's what the modular series is about, is just a class on that. So this is just another episode with a long setup of After the Glass Slipper. And here's our introducer. I prefer announcer. Here's our announcer, Mr. Big Shot. It's got to happen to... Oh, excuse me. Well, you also have one of those white scarves on that Big Shots wear. And I can tell by how good your hair looks that you drove here from L.A. in a some sort of convertible. You also smell a little bit like money and like maybe wood spice or something. Thank you, my friend. I'll take it from here. This is a ladies, this is a gentleman, this is a boy. I did drive here in a convertible, yes, and I wear a scarf to keep my neck warm. As the ladies, as the gentlemen, as the boys, as the girls, the friends beyond the binary, it's time for another episode of After the Glass Slipper. Okay, can I take a ride in your convertible? No, I have someone with me. What about, like, in that little seat in the back? Can I just ride in the back with you for a little while, please? Like, especially with the top down, so people see me with you. Like, just around, just by a couple houses of people that I may or may not have. You know, if we could drive in front of Trader Joe's a few times, and so the Trader Joe's workers see, and they say, is that Antonio Banderas? And who, like, can we just do that, please? Oh, my friend. Let me think about it. All right, After Glass Slipper. Thanks, everybody. Hello, it is I, Agatha, my mert turning to my room, flowing into it to be here with my letter man, who is, yes, my partner, my lover, and my best friend, who takes a nap right after my office hours. He seems to sleep here. All letter, but all man in my book, but no man. All letter, no man, but he's my letter man. That doesn't make any sense, but he's there. He is lying there as I flow into the room. And one of the babies is in here sleeping too. Oh, there's three babies. They have taken to bringing me other babies to talk to. And they said, maybe you're better off. This is what Shelley said, my teaching partner. She said, maybe you're better off teaching with teaching babies. And I just, I mean, I didn't even have to say anything. It felt too trite to say hilarious, Shelley, because it was not funny. And also, she's a fool, because I do calm the babies. That's why they bring them to me to talk to babies. One of them is moving around a bit, still awake or just waking up, but I will find a way to talk to the babies and to talk to you, my letter man. And also, by the way, not to brag to you babies or to you, letter man. Also, the birds come and listen in, some of them, because it is so, hearing about my day, he's good to nap to and relax to in the late afternoon sun. So in today's class, we moved on a little bit from all the folk tales or the tall tales or the fairy tale. It's not a fairy tale if it's a... I guess it could be. It's still identified that. But we moved into more of the mythology, another mythological tale. And I did interrupt things pretty early on because I said, well, this is interesting that we spend so much time in a class about fairy culture talking about humans. And this is a good, because this was going to be a tale of human gods, one or two continents away in like a little bit different, but very similar. You'll recognize the themes very quickly. Also, because you three are babies, you will find out very quickly if this is archetypal or not. I don't need Shelley to tell me these things. But I did need Shelley to explain to me, why are you so obsessed with humans? And everyone in the class started laughing. And first they were grinning. And as I went on, I said, well, this is another myth about human gods. When are we going to cover the fairy gods? Yeah, because this was about one of the goddesses of passion and love and romance, Pheromone, who I am familiar with. The charms of Pheromone, the song goes, shalt they not be phony, or else I'll feel so lonely. I think something, I don't know. One bard tried to sing it to me. I said, get away from me, bard. I'm in love with a letter, by the way. And they said, isn't that a puppet you created? And I said, never mind, I said. But I said, okay, Shelley, tell it to me. So we're going to talk about a human goddess of love. That's where we're starting the evening. And she said, yes, yes, yes. And she said, well, we find these is a great example of why humans need our help, your gods and goddesses. And they kept laughing, and someone said, desperately, yes, desperately need our help. And that the very people actually believe that our issues, they said, she said, issues with the deities, deity issues or issues with deities. Yeah, just either a reflection of our own nature or projection of our ego, I don't know, but something like that. The gods are very representative of the gods we got, the gods we deserve. And I said, well, I don't. And they said, you mean like Pheromone? Because she sounds like pretty great. Isn't she the one that everyone loves? And some of the students were presenting this tale that they had gathered, and, I was already distracted because I was confused. So she said, okay, go ahead to children, and said, okay, well, Pheromone was, yes, the goddess of all those things and more. And one of the things she was known for in this particular continent was making trouble for the other gods, a heartache, loin ache, her charms were considered irresistible and creating jealousy among gods and hurt feelings, tears, making gods cry and making them distracted, distractible, getting her way. Yeah, but mostly she had become, it was power. And I think some of the gods, and again, I hate analyzing these things now with Shelley in my mind saying, well, this is just an analysis of you. And I say, thank you, Shelley. But the other gods had grown tired of her behavior. And so they decided to give her like a taste of her own medicine or teach her a lesson. Yeah, but really it was a chance of like this passionate, where they try to get back at her for not doing what they liked or for making them cry. You know, we'll show you. So they decided to search to find the most normal, mundane human man, run-of-the-mill, super boring, who could talk forever about nothing. A doll who would, just like to ramble and go on and on and on over details, meandering tone, never making sense, talking in circles so much that the only people that would listen were his goats. He was a goat herder. They found him. And I know you may be thinking who he is, but his name was Enzo. And they said, he was the most ordinary of ordinary men. And he had a solitary job he tending goats and making sure they, would move around as they grazed. I think he wasn't even, I think he was a goat gatherer. I don't know if he herd goats. You just gather them together. I don't know. But he would talk to the goats and, the goats would chew and look at him and it would encourage him to go on and on. And so the gods tricked her, and they took her favorite, gleaming thing that she liked to put in her hair. This is Pheromone. And they cast it from the sky to the earth by the goats, and they placed a charm on it that the first human she would see after she touched this would be she would fall in love with them. And, of course, it worked out just like they planned. A lot of these, you know, sometimes she would fall in love with something else. But she went and got her hair thing, and she looked up, and there was Enzo with the goats talking and talking. And she felt herself overcome with desire for him, and she immediately went back and put the thing in her hair and, like, got ready. And she tried to be very seductive, and she said, well, hello. You know, they did some talking. Now, Enzo, he had been alone for a long time with just goats. And in his pastime, he'd been an over-talker, so but he was also introverted. So he didn't have very good people skills, and he found this suspicious. And, of course, this was smart, you know, because he said, well, who is this beautiful, shockingly beautiful? He did feel himself stirred with an equal desire for her and a curiosity, for she had these kind eyes, and she was saying, tell, what is it like to be, what were you talking to the goats about? So at first he was very nervous and suspicious, but, you know, she quickly said, well, okay, let's ease our way into this in the next 20 to 30 minutes. And then she said, well, where do you stay? And she said, my, you really do have nice elbows. And he said, well, no one's, you know, so she finally really got, you know, got his guard down. And eventually they, you know, by the way, they just kissed, you know, but you know, what I mean, for the evening, they went back to his camp, and they had a few kisses. They did exchange, they did some necking, which I know, pheromone is known for the nape of her neck to be, you know, it has caused many conflicts internationally known that a nape will even cause people to grab a microphone, you know. It's quite the nape, and also her clavicles are unprecedented. I mean, she's a goddess, so it's not like she has human clavicles. And so they had spent the evening together, and the next day, you know, Enzo couldn't believe it, and he was in love, fully, totally over head over heels in love. And all the other gods were watching from wherever they watch, like Olympic City or whatever. And they were listening to him going on and on. And then they said it'd be even more fun if she realizes, because she was still you're trying to make jokes, but you're just talking in circles. Keep going. And so, let's talk to the goats and everything together. And then the gods decided to make her aware of what was happening slowly, but also to stay in love with him temporarily. So she became aware that she was like, and then, you know, they spent about a week together. And then the gods released her, and she said, goodbye, Enzo. This is, was, and, you know, of course, Enzo, he was a little bit down, or a little bit more than down. And he found himself, you know, he said, well, I've never loved a woman like I did Pheromone. And also, well, we'll talk about that in a minute, but, so he was a bit down, and he didn't recover. He said, well, now I'm done just being regular old boring Enzo. And he said, I must, I have this now thirst for the kiss of Pheromone. And it was actually a pretty healthy reaction. He started traveling the world, first with his goats, and then he sold the goats off, and he kept traveling. And he spent his time learning how to interact with people. To be a people person, learning how to listen to people like Pheromone, listen to him, learning the art of complimenting, and learning the confidence to talk to people he's attracted to. But he never found the level of attraction that he had for Pheromone. Though he did find he quite enjoyed talking to people and helping people and saying, well, you have lovely elbows too. But he, you know, he never quite got, he never fell in love again for a time. And eventually he had traveled the world, and he said, enough is enough. I don't know. And he said, well, I'm going to give pheromone one last try. So he headed to a city where the greatest temple of pheromone was, the Pheromonion, I think it was called. And on the hill above the city, at the foot of the hill was the temple, and on the peak of the hill was a giant statue of pheromone, the largest marble statue known in the kingdom, maybe 15, 20, 30 feet. I'm not sure. Quite tall, though. And all of the city worshipped pheromone primarily, and most of the products were pheromone-related products for people to come. And, you know, none of them worked, of course, but people would make temples to offerings. So he had just rolled into town. He had traveled all night, and at dawn, the hill was in the east. He arrived at the temple, and he looked up as the sun rose behind this gleaming yellow-orange giant, you know, thingamajig. And he said, "Whoa." And he saw the outlines. And this statue was quite similar to when pheromone took on a human form, just much bigger. And he threw himself on the ground. And then he ran up the hill. And he realized it was a statue, but he did not care. And he fell in love with the statue, but in a way, I mean, he cared enough to have common decency. Let me tell you that. He didn't do anything weird in daylight. I mean, he is just a strange person anyway. But he became the caretaker of the statue, and he talked to the temple, and he would organize offerings people left at the statue. At first, he just started cleaning the bird thing, you know, brushing the birds away, and then cleaning up the birds. And then restoring the statue, you know, cleaning it, polishing it, buffing it, waxing it. And he even started to develop waxes that they would use on other statues of pheromone. And then they began selling the wax. It became a profitable way to help the temple expand. And he would talk to the statue, and he lived at the base of the statue. And he would climb the statue and be on her shoulder where he could sit. And she was in a position where one of her hands was up so he could stand on the hand. And at first people thought he was, because he was always talking to her, saying, well, or singing to her. And in a charming way that people found hilarious, but in a way mostly from afar they were laughing at him. When they were close, they would be drawn in because he was so happy. They were struck by it. The look on his face was not a madness, but a mad joy. And he would be humming and working or planning and saying, okay, well, these are the offerings, or, you know, however they divvied up the offerings, you know, for people in need. And then for different holidays, he would decorate the statue. And the great masquerade day, he would, you know, put a costume on for the visit of Papa Noel or something. He would dress the statue, and for the great candle celebration of the dawning of the new calendar, he would, you know, cover the statue with candles. And in the, you know, autumn celebration, all those things, he was, and people were struck by this, and they said, "This, he's so happy." And it was infectious, and especially at the Temple of Pheromone, the workers there seemed more happy. And caretaking of statues around this kingdom started to slowly rise as people took pride, and not just in Pheromone statues, but in other statues. Now, meanwhile, Enzo, a hero, I guess, and Pheromone, they had also, now Enzo did not quite know this at this point, but he and Pheromone had a son, or Pheromone had a son from the kissing. He burst right out of the nape of her neck in some normal way. Now that doesn't happen only with goddesses and humans kissing the nape, but he was born and he was named Enzo Jr. Yeah, but I think he was called Napin, something in the god's tongue. And oh boy, was this young man a handsome young man. I mean, so handsome, in fact, that, now again, DC, I don't know when this becomes, I don't understand the fairy culture as far as their opinion of humans, because this becomes strange. And I said, is this the gods behave in a strange way? Do they think humans behave in this way? Yeah, but Enzo Jr. was a handsome lad, and as he grew into a young man, he loved to swim, and he had somehow got all the skills that his father had developed and, you know, many things from his mother. He was half human and half god. And at some point he was swimming and he met Bianella from the Clam King's Kingdom. And she was taken with him, and they quickly became, dated, if you would use it to that term, more. And, you know, on the side, she was still with the Clam King. But that was, you know, kind of like a Beauty and the Beast situation. But anyway, Bianella was totally smitten with him. And they would spend all the time together on these little, I think you call them trysts. And word got out to Pheromone. And she also, you know, I try to gloss over this, but a lot of things that when they were talking about this, I think it went over the children's head, but I said, well, why would a mother behave? This is strange. Her handsome son, she was, you know, because she was very irritated that he was dating Bianella, and it wasn't because of ethics or morals. Almost like it was territorial. It's just something strange about it. I think that it was taking its, to lower the opinion of human beings or something. I don't know. But she said to Enzo Jr., you won't be with Bianella anymore. You're my son. And at first he tried rebellion, so then she turned to changing his tastes and his interests, and making Bianella seem less interesting, you know, using tricking him. I don't know exactly how. I think that's a whole nother story. And then what happened was also she let the Clam King know about it. So the Clam King said, listen, Bianella, I won't be made a fool of. And she said, you're a clam, a king. And he said, when the Clam King talks, there's a lot of bubbles, but I can't do that. And so Clam King said, you know, Bianella, you're grounded. No more going to the surface except for the 33, you know, the two quarters of the year you're allowed to go there. And even then, I don't want you talking to this Enzo Jr. And then Bianella was heartbroken. And also Enzo Jr. in some sense had fallen, had bought into what his mother said, at least at first. And so she, Bianella was down, and she took it as a slight that Pheromone had turned her little love, Enzo Jr., against her. And she swore she would get her back, and she did her research, and she found out that Enzo Jr. was son of Enzo. So then she found out who this Enzo was, and then she found out he was the famous statue caretaker. And she began to observe his behavior and how he had kind of started this movement, the new statue movement, and how people were following his example. And she kind of talked to all the gods. She said, look at all this. Look at how good your statues look. This Enzo character has really been doing a great job across this continent now. All of the statues of all the gods look great. They're all polished. They all have someone organizing, this is separate from the temple. This is just outdoor freestanding statues. Your statues are safe. They're cared for. We should reward this Enzo, Bianella said. And she talked to her mother, and her mother spoke. She said, I think this is a great idea. Really reward this. Look at how he's interacting with that statue. And they said, okay, Bianella, you go ahead and reward him. What are you going to do? And she said, I'm going to give him what he really wants deep down. And the god said, okay, great. So Bianella, went back and she watched Enzo from close-up, and it just happened to be right around the Pheromone Festival, when, like, Venus would transpose with some other planet or something, and she watched him, and as he talked and sang to the statue and kissed its earlobes and slid down the nape of its neck, Bianello was really taken. She said, wow, this man really loves this statue. And she called him over. She, you know, hid herself as like a, you know, like a traveling traveler. And she said, I have word from the gods. They want to reward you with something for your statue and you for your hard work. And she gave him this jar of oil. And she said, oil the feet of your statue goddess at dawn on the first day, or no, the last day of the festival, I think it was, because that was when it was most popular. And kiss the feet after you oil them. And he said, well, it's tomorrow. And she said, well, do it. And then a crowd had gathered because they loved it, especially at dawn. The statue, especially with the wax Enzo had put on it, it really looked good at dawn. And, you know, they would like to see him, you know, when he woke up, he had the most mundane conversations with the statue. So people would get a kick out of it. And, you know, they'd see, well, what is Enzo, you know, he had it covered in flowers for the Pheromone Festival. But so this morning he started to rub the oil, and it was a very fragrant, fragrant oil, and the fragrances carried on the wind. And the people were gathered, they were singing songs of Pheromone, people were kissing, you could say free kisses, you know, free kisses for Pheromone. You know, you say, some people say, you know, would say yes, and most people would say no, thank you. It was just blowing kisses, by the way, not lips to lips. You just forget a free kiss blown to you. Your mind, let a man, babies, you shouldn't be thinking like this, you're babies. Oh, you're not thinking like this. Good. And then he finished his whole jar. And oh, did her feet smell wonderful. I don't know, like, you know, like wood, expensive woods and, deep piney stuff and leather mixed together or something. I don't know. And as he was finishing, he laid a kiss on each of her toes. And as he got to her last pinky toe, you know, in a sandal, of course, he felt something reach down and pick him up. And it was the arm of a Pheromone statue, which we call, they were calling Holy Moni, because, you know, obviously it would be confusing if we said Pheromone statue is a lot of words. So Holy Moni. And she reached him to his lips and kissed him, and her lips were almost the size of his whole body. So, and he said, what? And he looked, and her eyes were open. Now, she was still marble, but very liquid marble. That was a sight to behold, and he almost fainted. And she cradled him, and she said, oh, my love, I've been waiting here frozen. Since you first laid eyes on me and I on you. And the people went crazy, and Bianello started to laugh because she knew she had set her plan in motion. And she was playing a bit of a medium-long game. And the people, they were feverish with this. And, you know, not to be, to just spend his life with his statue, that wasn't Enzo's style. And immediately everyone that had been caretaking for a statue said, where do I get this oil? So not only was this city in the Temple of Pheromone, did they go from very wealthy to unbelievably wealthy. And there were constantly reports of statues coming to life, but none, you know, that could be confirmed or disconfirmed ever. Yeah, but Enzo and Pheromone weren't done. You know, of course they would, you know, go for walks together. And they developed their own way of, much like me and the letterman, of connecting. You know, when one person's a letter and one person's a pit of lentils, it's not as, you know, like they show you, or they don't show you because your parents are embarrassed. But when you don't have a nape of your neck to kiss, or when your nape is a living marble. Anyway, and not like those statues you see at the foolish festivals with people with powder on them. No, 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 this was nothing like that. It was like nothing you've ever seen, because it would make your heart quicken. And oh, did statue loving, you know, skyrocket. It went from caretaking of statues to constant praising of statues. And of course, Pheromones was the most popular, her statue, though. So this was where Bianella had the foresight that suddenly, and this spread beyond this continent to other, you know, Pheromone-esque goddesses that would file their complaints with Pheromone, because people became obsessed with Pheromone, you know, of course, mostly with Enzo. And what did we call her? Holy Moni. Like, she became her own goddess, but Enzo said, no, no, she's a statue woman. Please don't praise her. So people said, okay, well, we'll just praise this other statue. And no one stopped, you know, no one cared about Pheromone anymore. They cared about her statues, and they people would rate, there was, you know, tablets about the top five Pheromone statues to see before you go to the big farm. Underrated, you know, the most underrated Pheromone statues of all time. These are the most beautiful locales, you know, Pheromone statue hikes, lunch and breakfast, you know, cafes around statues. And the praising of the statues, they followed Enzo's lead. So everyone was just nice to the statues. And Pheromone, once she started watching this, she couldn't stop. She said, when the heck, no one did this to me. They always asked me for things and said, make this person love me or whatever. She said, they're just giving things to these statues and polishing them. And they let birds poop on me when back before this. So she got really, really irritable. And even, you know, even though she was a goddess, her feelings were hurt because she said, well, I'm just unappreciated. And she huffed and she puffed and she thought, well, I get rid. And she said, you know what, I'm going to show that statue. And so 1 year later, at the height of the Pheromone Festival, when Enzo and Holy Moni returned, she showed up at the festival, same size as the statue. And no one cared. Again, that was it. That was the line. She said, what are you doing praising this statue? And the humans were like, what are you, some jealous demigoddess? Leave Pheromone's favorite statue, Holy Moni, alone. She became living because of Enzo's love and as a gift from Pheromone. And she said, no, no, I'm Pheromone. And no one was having it, and then she didn't really know what to do, because everyone, and also everyone was so happy. That was the thing that really drove her. She said, "What? I'll just take away, you know." She said, "No one needs my love powers." And she said, well, "Look at that nape on that neck. That's marble. It's not real. Not even a goddess could get a nape like that. You fools! It's not real proportions. It's not physically possible to." And then the statue did move a neck. And now, meanwhile, Bianella was very amused at this, and while Pheromone was distracted, she went and got Enzo Jr., turned him into a hermit crab, and brought him to the bottom of the sea to live at a side, under the nose top shell of her husband, Clam King. And so when Pheromone got back, Enzo Jr. was gone. And she had had enough, so then she went to the other gods, and she said, are you seeing this? And the gods hadn't really been aware of it, you know, because they were too busy with god stuff, and the humans aren't so important to them, except when we get on their nerves. But she said, look at these people, like, these people are praising the statues. She goes, they've gone from serving a purpose for actual offerings, you know, to be offered to a symbol of us. Like a symbol, offerings is symbolically offered to a symbol. Actually, well, no, wait a second. She goes, you know, they love the statues and not us. Like, they used to bring offerings, actual offerings, to a symbol of us because they were actually sacrificing for us. Now, she goes, it's reversed. She goes, this is the icons have taken, you know, taken over. And the god said, well, this is between you and Bianella. You know, you're going to need to fix it with her. You're going to need to make things right. And so she went down to Bianella and she said, listen, Clam King, you know, leave us alone, please. And she said, listen, I got to fix this thing. And Bianella said, well, what are you offering? And she said, well, I'll let you keep Enzo Jr. What do you have him as, a cockle or a shrimp or something? And Bianella laughed and she said, you're smooth, close. She goes, if you let me use Enzo Jr. for help, I'll, you know, send him back here to live with you. And Bianella said, okay, deal. So then she turned Enzo, you know, Pheromone and Enzo Jr. went to the surface. And Pheromone said to Enzo Jr., look at this. And she showed Enzo Jr., her father, gallivanting with a statue and singing to a statue. And she goes, your father's loving a statue and kissing a statue in front of crowds of people. She goes, isn't that embarrassing? This is what your father does, humiliates you. Meanwhile, you know, you've been cavorting with goddesses, but down on Earth, you're a joke. No one would care about any Enzo Jr. because your father's the guy who kisses statues. And like all sons, you know, Enzo Jr. had father issues and obviously mother issues, clearly. But he came up with a very crafty solution. With he said, well, get Bianella here and get the other gods on the same page. I have a solution. And Pheromone said, well, what is it? And he said, slowly change the value of marble. You know, he goes, you know, the gods could do it. In the minds of people and in the actuality, maybe explain to them that it's not the statue. He goes, you know, you'll figure it out, your gods and goddesses, but make marble worth more than anything, and not just a statue of marble, any piece of marble. More than gold, more than diamonds, more than jewels. Make marble the most valuable thing on earth and watch those statues crumble. And I just got to interject here because I think this is, again, I brought this up as an objection to Shelley to show what humans are really like. Because very quickly this happened and all of the statues started to be taken into pieces by greedy people. And they started cracking pieces of the statue and fighting over the statue or taking statue toes. And chaos erupted, and that became, as many people know, the Great Marble Wars, which lasted for hundreds of years. These marble wars, the effects, I think they call it the marble, I don't know, but anyway, now Enzo Sr. was shocked by all this, and of course, because of the size and consciousness of what is her name? His wife. They did marry. He married a statue. Holy moly. He was like, I got to put a stop to this. Now, the good thing was, there's a lot of marble in other places. But, you know, quickly all the marble was things. And some people that were still in Enzo's camp, you know, this is a belief system, defended some statues. And that was the marble, you know, that was the marble, part of the marble wars, was saying, no, you know, because they saw the statues as the gods. But then they quickly realized the futility of WAR being in a marble war anyway. But Enzo, and I guess in his believers, he didn't really consider himself like a charismatic figure. But he had saw, how can I save these statues, you know, because of the, you know, just to look at, and of course I'm in a relationship with the one living statue. And he called the Pheromone who sent Enzo Jr. and he said, oh, you're my son. And they, you know, they didn't really get along. They like, there was a gulf between them. But Enzo Sr. said, I love this statue. Like, you've loved almost every goddess up there. and I'm your father. Please protect the state. You know, I need to figure out a way to stop this. You know, I just wanted happiness, and the statues brought me happiness. And I believe that the other statues have been imbued with something, even though they haven't come to life. And Enzo said, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe, Enzo said, he softened, you know, because he's a swift young man. He said, okay, well, you know, we could stop the marble thing, but that's going to take forever because there's now this marble wars and stuff. But he said, maybe you could protect the statues. You already, he goes, if you vanished, you know, that would help the people that believe in you defend the statues even more wholeheartedly. And he goes, I have to think that, he goes, if your statue, Holy Moni, it became conscious, it had to come from somewhere. So you may be right that all statues are imbued with the power. But Enzo Jr. said, I don't know whence that power comes. You would have to find out, Father. And the father said, how? And he said, well, you'd have to find the source from which the statue consciousness arrives. And he said, actually, I spoke to Bianello about it, because Enzo Jr., because she said all that oil did was awaken, you know, the connection. And Enzo Sr. said, okay, I've got an idea then. Thank you, son, and I hope you have a wonderful life here. And Enzo Jr. went to Ferrimoni, and this was probably the 10th Ferrimoni festival since Holy Moni had come to life. And he said, listen, we're going to go away. And she said, how? And he said, I want you to eat me at the height of the festival. Swallow me whole. You know, not eat me, actually. Just swallow me whole. And he said, much like all these tales of going inside, he goes, I'll go inside you. I'll find the source. And you follow me down the source. And I'll see where the source goes, you know, first. But make sure it's good. And she said, I trust you, my husband, my human husband, she called him Enzi, Enzi Poo. And so at the height of the festival, Enzo kind of explained, you know, the marble wars and our thing is to protect these statues because maybe there's something, particularly the statues that have eyes, you know, we must protect what they watch over us. So whether it's symbolically, as you know, Enzo made a great speech, basically, and then was swallowed into his statue wife. And he did find in her belly not just a stomach, of course, because she was a statue, but a cosmic melange or something, where he traveled, of all places, to the fairy kingdom. And he found that she'd arose out of the fairy powerhead or something. And the fairy people welcomed him, and they said, who are you? He said, Enzo, I'm a human. And they said, okay, yeah, we were trying to help. Remember, we were trying to help you, and we were really happy at how you helped others. It seems like your gods and your humanity, you know, you people are kind of wrong-headed. We think that's probably the issue, is your head was put on wrong, or they put too many brain cells in there. But the fairy kingdom, this is a whole nother story, but they're like, we're down here to help. And Enzo said, well, can my wife come back with me? And they said, she can. You're welcome to live here. And they said, but what if you leave the channel open? Can you have her leave something behind? And he said, how? And they said, well, she'll take her arm off a statue, swallow that, and she'll come back. She'll be short an arm here in the fairy kingdom with you, but the arm will be, you know, it'll grow out of this melange into the ground as a reed. And Enzo said, this, I don't understand it. She said, yeah, you're a human, but then we'll be able to see through all the eyes of the statues of the world, to keep an eye on people and know when they need help from a fairy godparents. And Enzo said, that sounds grand. And so he did it, and him and his wife went to live in the fairy kingdom. And I don't know what happened after that to them, or the marble wars eventually petered out as the marble economy. You know, then they said, well, we got all these quarries of marble. What's it good, you know? And, but the fairies always had a connection. I think that's another saying of like, the fairies are always watching, to see when you need help. They never told me this when I was mean to Cinderella, of course, but, And I said, what a day in class. What a day to be a woman and to hear a tale of love spanning things. Quite nice, my little man. And the three babies that are here. Hopefully none of you are as precocious as Enzo Jr. Good night. I want to thank everyone who lays around to support April, Cam, and Jenny with a G. Thanks and good night. Thanks and good night to Jody, Aaron, and Acacia. Thank you and good night. Mary, Joe, and Ben. Thank you and good night. Devorah, Caleb, and Carrie with a K. Thanks and good night. Skylar, Karen with a double A, and Steve, thank you and good night. Tracy, Gail, and Scott, thanks and good night. Sars, Janine, and Taylor, thanks and good night. Kat, Andy, and Brian, thank you and good night. Lisa, Kate, and Chauncey, thank you and good night. Zeppelin, Mary with an I, and Jennifer, thank you and good night. Tamara, Adam and Lo, thanks and good night. Kelly, KJ, and Nora with the double O, thank you and good night. Carla, Andrew, and Laura Lee, thanks and good night. Scott, Bridget and Lex, thanks and good night. And Kat and Holly, thank you and good night. And over on PayPal, I want to thank Julie, Janet, and Melanie, thank you and good night. Drawn, Diogenes, and Carla, thank you and good night. Abiz, Jennifer, and Paula, thank you and good night. And Priscilla and Michael, thank you and good night. And then over on Venmo, thank Ava M, Rachel, and Josie. Thanks, thanks so much and good night.
All right, everybody, this is Scooter. This is Weeks in Review. And this is where I run through my Weeks in Review stuff. What was on Sleep With Me Plus in the past month, and what you can expect to see on in the public feed too. Now I have if you sign up for Sleep With Me Plus or you're already signed up for Sleep With Me Plus, I highly recommend using a podcast app that allows search within the feeds, but using just one podcast app for Sleep With Me Plus content only. And then keeping your other podcasts, your daytime podcasts, and whatever app you use now. And I would just check out a couple podcast apps you could choose from on Apple are Overcasts, iCatcher, Pocket Casts. And on Android, you could try out Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict. For this example, I have the only thing I have in my app is the Boyfriends level. I have four podcasts, the ad-free full episodes, the story-only episodes. Nothing in Sleep With Me Plus has ads except for the really old episodes in the archives. We got the story-only versions of the show, the all-intro, all-night versions of the show, and then the bonus episodes. So let's start with the bonus episodes, actually. So Saturday, a new Posty episode came out. It was one that Russell loved, and that came out. And that's in the bonus feed. You know, some people like listening to Posty Super Deluxe episodes during the day. Some people sleep to them. And, yeah, so that one is in the bonus feed. And then looks like we got a bonus coming out for Boar Besties and Boar Friends on Thursday of this week, which is April 15th when I'm recording this. And then we have another Posty Super Deluxe came out a couple weeks ago. That was a picnic lunch with Scooter. And that's in the bonus feed. And that makes just so much easier for those of you that don't like automate your playlist or anything, just to kind of build and choose how you want to listen. That's popping the all intro, all night episodes. I know all intro episode is coming out this Thursday. Last Thursday was Make Great Pets Season 1 Part 2, almost 6 hours. That's about the max length we can get and have a good file size. So that was like 7 episodes of Make Great Pets. April 3rd, all intro episode came out. And then we had... March is that bonus episode. So there was another all intro episode. So that's in the all intro all night feed. And again, like so much easier, like these all intros. Is that what everything that's in there? 277 episodes split between all. So if you love all intros, I bet 200 of those are all intros, maybe even more. And then in the store, both in the story only episode feed and then in the all ad free feed. Let's run through the new episodes. Bring It On Week started last week. So we had 12:54 was our first watch along where I watched half of the movie Bring It On. Wednesday was 12:53, Ben Broughton, the Crayon Rambler. That was one of those episodes that had an intro that I said I should make an episode based on this intro. Went to make an episode based on the intro, and it went in an even another direction of what if there was an RPG game based on the movie Bring It On, which led me to figure out I never watched Bring It On. Let me learn more. Then I ended up watching Bring It On. Then April 7th was Alba Sabelik's, like, we're getting ready, big announcement, if I haven't made it anywhere. We're going to do 3 seasons of a crossover with Alba Salix. So that's cool. So that's something we're looking forward to doing. And that was episode one of that. That was the one we did originally. Then 12:52 was the finale of the Great British Bake Off and episode 10. Then Multiplex 5, Tiki Transistor Hut. That was a good one. 12:50, one of my favorite episodes probably in the past few years, a Willy Wonka tour that came out of like some news articles about experience. And I said, this has got to be an episode. And that will be a series. I mean, like a recurring thing. Then Great British Bake Off, episode 9, Patissier. And Multiplex episode 4, and then we're back to our last audio news. So it's everything. Again, if you ever need support, support at supercast.com is there to help you. Though if you're listening to this episode, I'm assuming you're not like, you don't need support, but if you do, and the other thing is like, yeah, these this is my main way to communicate. I learned this on Patreon. Most people just don't read their emails from Supercast or from me, and most people aren't on our Discord or follow our social media. And so these messages are how the majority of supporters get their information. I do it in a sleepy voice because there's like, I put it in at the end of the free show too. But this is a kind of key way, but these episodes are easy to skip, especially if you're just using one podcast app, right, in building your playlists from that podcast app. So, yeah, thanks, everybody, for supporting the show. Reach out if you have any feedback at sleepingmepodcast.com. If you need support at supercast.com. And good night.